Hey, people. For the first time for this spinoff podcast, Bender and I are both here doing the intro for That Year in Comics.
Hello, hello.
This episode's going to be 2004, and I think this was one of the... I think so far, the three, this was my most fun. I don't know that it was the best comics we've read, but
it wasn't
most fun.
Dark, and it was...
Well, we get a little dark with one of the books.
One of them, but it wasn't too dark, and it was just one we both really, really enjoyed.
And it's a book you're going to go home and read that you've never read before.
So. Yeah, it was infinitely astonishing.
That's right. It was a crisis that you never read. All of that said, hey, be sure to check out... CaveCon in Springfield, Missouri, because more importantly, check out the Comic Cave in Springfield, Missouri, and more importantly than that, in September, check out CaveCon, where you'll find at least one of the hosts of this show there.
Yeah, I'll have a newborn. I don't think
you'll be there, but
maybe I can dress her up.
If you do check it out, or you do go in there, you tell the owner, Josh Roberts, that you listen to our show and that's why you're there, because he's a very good friend. I would go so far as to say a brother of mine. He's a great guy. I want that to be a very big success. Because as we talk about in this episode, with 40 comic conventions in the year 2004, we need more in Missouri. We need them.
Absolutely, because I've never been to one.
And also, while you're there, you can meet in the CaveCon in September. You can also meet author of Waking the Weaver, a Timberhaven novel, Aaron Conway, who's been on this show. So go do both of those things.
And buy his book.
Yeah.
Support your independent artist.
Buy the damn book. And go to the shop and buy it from the shop, because I do know that he has hard copies there to purchase at the shop. So do that. And then show up and get it autographed in September.
Yep.
All right. So that's all we've got. This is the That Year in Comics, 2004.
Yep.
Go follow us at PC Bombcast on all the socials. And go to PCBombcast.com to follow all things PC Bombcast.
And let us know what you like, rate.
Hashtag TYIC for any year you want us to review in the future.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, listen to the show. In 1938, Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster created Superman, and with him, the superhero genre was born and the comic book industry was kickstarted. Now, I've been a fan of superheroes my whole life, but it wasn't until 1991, when Jim Lee and Chris Claremont relaunched X-Men, that I became obsessed. And while my obsession has dwindled over the years, this new series from the Pop Culture Bombcast is my way of reconnecting to what made me love comics so much in the first place. And I've brought my co-host and good friend Bender, who reconnected with his love of comics through our friendship more than 10 years ago. So join us as we break down the best of what each year in comic book history had to offer as we give you That Year in Comics. Hey, welcome to 2004. I was waiting on you to chime in. But
okay. I didn't know what I was doing.
Well, I was waiting on some kind of response, but instead you're just on your phone trying to find a comic that wasn't from 2004.
No, you're right, it wasn't. This was the way I like to refer to it, freshman year part two of college for me.
the sequel to freshman year. Hey, before we jump into 2004, though, like almost every dead character in the history of comics, we are back for our third episode.
Hells yeah.
I mean, they come back two or three times. That's a little bit of a foreshadowing for somebody we'll talk about at the end of this episode.
Maybe we'll murder each other at the end of one of these and then come back the next time.
Maybe.
Yeah,
I don't see that happening. But hey, any thoughts on the previous episode of 1996 before we jump forward in time to 2004 in our DeLorean?
No.
I
liked 86 better than 96.
Reading wise,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense. I thought it was a decent episode. We got some good feedback by one of the normal sponsor of our normal podcast, Rick from the Beer Salt Shop.
Yeah,
he enjoyed it. He's now following us because he likes that year in comics stuff.
Yeah,
but that doesn't matter. Let's just stop beating around the
buck. I did think of something. Judo Christian is not a thing.
Yeah, it's Judeo. thank you, Dusty, for pointing that out.
But it should be.
Yeah. Well, I imagine there's Judo Christian somewhere.
Maybe. Like, I feel like that would be Chuck Norris's comeback movie is like Judo Christian.
Chuck Norris and Kirk Cameron are Judo Christians.
Yep, we just wrote a comic book.
They're out to kick ass in the name of God.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's gonna happen.
It's awesome.
But that said, let's stop beating around the bush. Let's jump right into 2004. So let me break down what happened in the world in 2004.
All right.
First off, probably the biggest news out of 2004, Facebook was made for college students everywhere.
Yep.
They had the preliminary hearings for Mr. Saddam Hussein,
He was being tried for war crimes. Those started. The Indian Ocean earthquake, which was a 9.1 to 9.3 earthquake, which was the largest known tsunami affecting the coastal areas of Thailand, India, Sri Lanka, the Maldives. Yeah, that Maldives. One. Malaysia, Myanmar, and Bangladesh, and Indonesia.
It's Myanmar.
I don't think that's it.
Yeah, it is Myanmar.
Myanmar?
I think so.
I don't know that I should take pronunciation lessons.
You probably shouldn't, but I'm pretty sure I'm right on that one.
But it killed over a quarter of a million people.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It is insane. So that was a big one. The year in sports, 2004, Summer Games were held in Athens, Greece.
Yep.
Unfortunately, the curse of the Bambino was lifted as the Red Sox won the World Series against our St. Louis Cardinals.
You left out Michael Phelps won his first one of eight medals that
I'm
year.
I'm not done. How could you say I left
out? Well, you can't. You just jumped around.
Oh, in Athens, yes. Yeah, so back in Athens, Michael Phelps did. He debuted with some gold medalage there.
Yeah, won the most amount of medals in one Olympics.
Probably, sadly, the biggest story in sports is Janet Jackson's right nipple made waves by appearing next to Justin Timberlake during the halftime show of the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Did you see it?
I did see it.
Like you like were actually watching.
Oh, we even went to the interwebs to try to break it down and see what happened. It was staged event.
Oh, I think so too. Staged. I mean, that nipple ring was way too cool.
Yeah, she
to just be
that
wearing.
Was, and it wasn't a malfunction. That thing was a peel away spot.
Oh yeah, for sure.
JT in the heat of the moment's not tearing leather or pleather. So,
no.
In music, Ashley Simpson was caught lip syncing on SNL and backpedaled out of it in the worst way possible by throwing her band underneath the bus.
Oh, I forgot about that.
William Hung lost an American Idol, but he won our hearts when he did his rendition of Ricky Martin's She Bangs, which,
she bangs.
If you know Ricky Martin, she ain't banging nothing there. Then Usher and Little John said, yeah, with Ludacris enough times to make a number one song for the year.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, TV and music, we did lose Marlon Brando and Rodney Dangerfield, and only one of them this year has been reportedly had sexual romps with Richard Pryor, and it was not Rodney Dangerfield.
Although that would have been funny.
I get no respect when I'm fucking you. Hey, Friends came to an end, but House and Lost debuted.
We went to the same website.
Lord of the Rings saw The Return of the King come back with an Oscar for Best Picture, and some of these movies made names. Shrek 2, Blade Trinity, Anchorman, Napoleon Dynamite, Eternal Sunshine, Garden State, Hellboy, and not to mention maybe two of the greatest comic book inspired movies of all time, Spider-Man 2, which is your favorite, and possibly one of the most underrated superhero flicks ever, The Incredibles.
Is it underrated?
I think it's underrated in a term that when people talk about comic book movies, they don't say that it's one of the best. But
in
terms,
it had nothing. It wasn't based on anything.
But in terms of a Disney Pixar movie, I think it's widely considered one of the greatest. So.
Yeah, I agree. I love it.
So that was the world. Anything on the world before we jump into the comics?
The only thing that I had was, well, I had a couple things. I had you missed Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
I did miss that.
And a little movie that I also love called Shaun of the Dead came out.
Oh, you know what? I meant to handwrite that in. I typed this up and missed it, and that was a very big one, especially for the our world.
Yeah, and then staying in, which I thought was topical, Brie Larson made her film debut in 13 Going on 30, Ryan Reynolds' wife.
I did not know that was her first, but yeah, that is very timely for Mrs. Larson. Although I don't think we're going to see her until 2019, period. So.
Really?
Yeah.
And then Megan Fox made her debut, if you're into the Transformers movies. She's not in those anymore, though.
Solid first movie. No, she had that massive falling out with... Yeah.
No, but then she came back for another one, like the third one or something.
Yeah, I still don't think they get along.
Probably not. Hmm. In Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen, personal favorite of mine, Emily Blunt, in a movie I had never watched called My Summer Love. Didn't know it existed.
I'm glad you put down movies that have no pertain to you.
I just really like Emily Blunt, okay?
All right.
And then music... 99 Problems by Jay-Z and American Idiot by Green Day.
Yeah, I did
biggest
see
albums,
that. Yeah,
or biggest songs and albums.
Yeah, that'd be the Black Album and American Idiot. Yeah, that was the name.
And then Ronald Reagan died. That was the only other thing that I didn't. That you had that I didn't.
Yeah, there you go.
Or I had that you didn't.
Well, then let's jump right into the comic industry in the year 2004. I always like to start with sales. Thanks to a slew of blockbuster runs and some high-profile limited series, 2004 was a very positive year in comics, being up 6% over what was a reported good 2003.
Oh, yeah?
The top 10 comics that year in this particular order from 1 to 10, Superman, number 204, which was the debut of Jim Lee and Brian Azzarello, came in second. Superman Batman, number 8, which featured a bunch of great Michael Turner covers, and that was the debut of the new Supergirl. Hmm. Identity Crisis, number 1, well, more on that in a bit. Astonishing X-Men, number 1, more on that. Superman 205, this list gets crazy here. Superman Batman 10, Identity Crisis 2, Superman 206 and Superman Batman number 9. That is DC dominance right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, no shit.
Marvel had two books, and I mean, it's weird how times change.
Yeah.
No Spider-Man to be seen, you know?
Yeah. I don't know what he was doing
some
it for.
Noted first appearances, the Winter Soldier, Captain America, Winter Soldier debuted in Captain America number 8. That okay. was Ed Brubaker's run, I
yeah,
believe.
That's a good run.
Diodato Jr., I believe, was the art. Maybe. I didn't write that down. X-23 made her debut in NYX, number 3. But technically, her first appearance would have been in a cartoon, X-Men Evolution, the year before.
Yep.
And then Ord, who we'll talk about later in Astonishing X-Men, number 1. Some other notable events of 04, Eric Larson took his turn at CEO of Image. After 27 years, Dave Sim's Cerebus the Aardvark ended its 300-issue run, possibly the greatest independent comic of all time in terms of impact and longevity.
Okay.
CrossGen Entertainment announced Chapter 11 bankruptcy, ending its publishing and dissolving some pretty underrated lines of comics that came through CrossGen. And another note on independent, two profile independent comics con this year. Jeff Smith ended his bone after 55 issues. And then I wrote this down, and I need to start including this. There were 40 major comic conventions this year, major ones, like notable
in
ones.
In 2004?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Including 4 Wizard Worlds, of which I attended the one in Chicago in this year. Hmm. And I got a little note here just to let people get some of your credibility. How many comic conventions have you attended in your life?
0.
Not very good, Bender.
I do need to go to one.
You do. I always invite you, and you never go.
The Wizard Con always falls on like a soccer tournament or something.
And the fact that you call it Wizard Con means people are going to lynch you from hang you from their rafters.
Wizard World.
Yes. notable series in 2004. This is some stuff that we're not going to talk about. You know, we always break down a handful of comics at the end of this. But things that were of note. This was a good year for comic books. Superman had his Godfall run. Superman Batman, we mentioned. Planetary did its first crossover with Batman in Crossing Worlds. New Avengers debuted. Constantine was still killing it. Runaways, Brian K. Vaughan's initial volume, came to an end.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's a good, solid run.
Planetary, Preacher, you had so many stuff. I'm not Preacher. Planetary, you had so many good comics that were going on. Not to mention the 3 that we're going to talk about in detail here. And I guess we should say this. The first one I'm going to turn over to you. We typically, like the last episode, there's no structure format on how we break these down. We did a good, bad, and the ugly because I thought that year was so notably bad with the bad ones.
Mm-hmm.
So we do like to pick like what our favorites are, and I definitely did that with the last 2.
Yeah.
We picked this one because it was timely, and you had been in the middle of reading it, or you'd brought it up anyway.
Well, we were bouncing around ideas for comics, and I was looking, you know, different years and stuff, and I had... The Astonishing X-Men came up, but I know we're not going to talk about
that. Yeah, we're not doing
that one. But, so then I started looking at other stuff that came out that year, and it was the premiere of the one that we are going to talk about right now, and it seemed pretty timely with the movie coming out Thursday? Friday?
I think it's this
Friday.
This
Friday, I believe.
Probably Thursday, because that's what movies do.
Yeah, you know.
By the way, we are talking about the new Deadpool 2, and that it's getting reviews saying it's better than the first one.
Yeah, I mean, it holds up. I really didn't have any doubts that it wouldn't be funny or good, at least. I had 0 expectations for the first one and enjoyed it, so I figured it'd only get better from here.
So that said, our first book we're going to jump into is the initial 6 to 8 issues. You can hit on 7 and 8 if you want, but the first 6 were solely in 2004,
yeah.
And 7 and 8 closed out 2004. Did you write down the
creators? I read, yes. So it was written by... want me to read it?
No, it's Nisi Asa. It's Fabian Nisi Asa.
Yeah, and then... drawn by Mark Brooks and Patrick Zurcher.
Yeah,
Mark Brooks only did the first 2 books.
Yeah, Patrick Zurcher did 3 through 24, so he stuck around for a while.
So this ran, I guess, for 44 issues,
No, it went right to 50. I read that. Yeah, it went all the way to 50 and ended.
Which is amazing because this is not that good.
Well, and I some things of note for you real quick before you jump into it. Yeah. It was launched in the wake of the cancellation of both characters' titles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the best thing about the series, and I have cards on the table, I've only read it sporadically here and there. The covers by Scotty Young were unbelievable. Yeah, so. Yeah.
I'll give you that. But it's just, otherwise, if I read all 12 issues of the first, as if it
came out
monthly.
And you can go all into 12 if you want. Yeah. That's fine.
And I mean, it's no big deal, but I just assumed it was monthly because I'm getting them in trade form. But it's just, it wasn't that great. But I think for those of you who, most people know who Deadpool is from the first movie, but there may be some people who don't know who Cable is or don't know that much about Cable going in. Do you want to lead into him first? And then
if you want, go ahead.
So I wrote this down because his convoluted story is pretty insane. He is a telepathic, telekinetic, and technopathic mutant who is the son of Scott Summers, Cyclops, and Madeline Pryor, Jean Grey's clone.
Yes.
Who was born with a technovirus, which is basically an alien virus that attached itself to him as an infant. They ship him off to the future to take care of the virus or find a cure in the future. Well, he grows up in an alternate timeline where Charles Xavier, correct me if I'm wrong, is killed and Apocalypse takes over and basically wipes everybody out.
Well, no, because he did not grow up in the age of Apocalypse.
You're right. See, this is where I kind of got confused.
The non- metal arm Goldeneye, the one that did not become that.
Oh, Nathan
X-Man.
Summers or whatever. Yeah. So then, do you remember exactly how he lives in Apocalypse's world or whatever?
He grew up in a future where with that, but he did not grow up in the age of Apocalypse.
That's
and
right.
He was,
that's right.
And
that's where I get him confused.
Yeah, he came back in time like they do.
But he's all powerful. He's got, you know, the telepath, he can talk to machines, he's got telekinesis powers, and he holds this technovirus, which is basically like a Matrix-style metal thing that keeps trying to take over his body, cancer-style thing. He holds it at bay with his psionic powers, like his telekinesis powers.
Which is why in the early run of the comics, you never see how powerful he can be, because had he unleashed his powers, then the virus would take him over.
Yeah.
So he has to keep it at bay constantly. So how does he sleep?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't know how Black Bolt sleeps, but I like the reasoning they make for it before they do him.
Yeah. So leading into this, I think that's what basically was the premise of this is. So the first arc of this run is called
Looks Could Kill.
Yeah, if Looks Could Kill. And it basically leads off as Deadpool is hired by the One World Church, which is a French church, to steal a virus that's going to turn the
entire world blue.
It's going to turn the entire world blue.
Blue. For no reason.
No, I mean, they had their reasons. their reasons were that, you know, racism and, you know, gender.
Yeah.
Thing.
But wouldn't you be shades of blue? So that would be a problem too.
I know everybody was just blue.
Oh, you were just gonna be blue. Okay.
Everybody was just like super blue. The art is like super goofy comic, you know, cartoony for, you know, Cable and Deadpool. So, and then Cable is trying to figure out how to use his powers for good because he's came back from the future
and
this time.
Newly enhanced powers. Yeah. He's got more power.
Yeah, he's even more powerful now, and he's back from the future, so he knows how the future turns out that it doesn't go well. And so he's like, "How can I change this?" So he's intrigued by this church.
Yeah.
So Deadpool is hired to steal a virus from the Germans. That is, I forget the even name of the virus, but anyways, it basically allows the church to turn everybody blue, but it's flawed. It is and needless to say, Cable and Deadpool both become infected by this virus, and then Deadpool needs Deadpool's DNA to keep the virus at bay and stop his technovirus as well. So about midway through the comic, Cable ingests Deadpool.
Yeah, he absorbs him completely.
Throws him up.
Because Deadpool regenerates.
Yeah, and then he regenerates, and now Cable is cured. So the whole first story arc is ridiculously stupid. Cable takes the virus that he now has.
Well, their DNA is metalled, mixed.
Yeah, and they mix together. So now Cable fixes the virus as well, turns the whole world pink.
Yeah.
instead of blue just because he can, and then says, just kidding, turns everybody back to normal and becomes an all-powerful god.
Well, he becomes their savior. He infects them in order to save them.
Yeah, yeah, just so that everybody knows that he's that powerful. But there is a catch. Now Cable and Deadpool are linked together genetically. So at the very end, Cable puts together his some spaceship that he had.
The Gray Malkin.
Yeah, the Gray Malkin. And it's got teleportation powers that he uses to jump around.
And Deadpool would later use this throughout his entire comic run. So.
Yeah. So, but there's a catch to it that since their DNA is linked, anytime Cable teleports, Deadpool and him teleport and combine together and then have to tear each other apart. And then Deadpool can also teleport and tear each other apart.
Yeah.
Which leads into
that the, sets up the entire series.
Yeah, so. The entire series. So then the second run on this is... which was 7 through 10, which I guess like only really counts for 7 and 8. But basically, the second part of this is Cable sets out to be a savior for the entire world.
Right.
Forcing all of the world to give up their weapons, and he creates that Gray Malkin as a refuge for free thoughts for scientists and philosophers and anybody else who wants to come live there without religious persecution or any of that stuff. So he's basically forcing the Gaza Strip to give up weapons, and you know, Iran and Iraq to get along, and Islam and all this, everybody to get along, and it's making all the world powers nervous. Shield tries to take him out and fails. The X-Men try to take him out and they can't figure out how to do it, and so they hire Deadpool to steal a bunch of technology to create a teleportation to that'll
and
allow
one thing
them.
We do miss about Deadpool, or not Deadpool, but Cable, is he's a military genius.
Yes.
He's a brilliant tactician, yeah. Even more so than his dad.
There's a pretty good setup in here that Cyclops and Wolverine and the rest of the X-Men are running these drills, and they keep failing in the Danger Room. They keep failing it, and they're on like 77 tries.
More in the Danger
Room later. Yeah, and they couldn't figure it out. So that's when they finally bring in Deadpool, because Deadpool and him are connected at this point. So they figure if they can convince Deadpool by letting him become an X-Men, which is what Deadpool has always wanted, is to be an X-Men. So like, well, we'll let him be an X-Men if he gets us in there.
He doesn't have a lot going on.
They just give him an outfit. He's like, okay, I'm in.
For having three distinct voices, he doesn't have a lot going on upstairs.
Yeah, no, nothing at all. He's just whatever. Well, anyways, so S.H.I.E.L.D. tries to take him out. The X-Men try to take him out. Deadpool double-crosses the X-Men. And that's when Cable admits that he actually wanted the X-Men to succeed and take him out so that he would die a savior for the entire world and show the world as a die a martyr and show the world that there is a better way. And it was his way, and he sacrificed his life to make the world a better place by throwing all the weapons of mass destruction into the sun and different things like that. Anyways, it goes sideways, and it kind of gets real gray and stupid, but Silver Surfer shows up, kicks the shit out of Cable, and they fight all across the world, breaking things and putting it back together at the exact same time, which was kind of cool.
They really overpower Cable, because Silver Surfer should just be able to snap a finger, call out to the Avengers Infinity War, and erase him.
Yeah.
He can just do that.
But he was so powerful, but he was burning out, and he was going to lose his world, so he has, for some reason, Deadpool lobotomize him. And then the last two issues of this that lead all the way through 12 is... Deadpool steals a techno alien from AIM and MODOK.
Yeah.
Has the Fixer, which is a super cool character from Thunderbolts. I don't know. Have you ever read anything on the Fixer? The super smart guy with all the technology. He's a fun character. Has him graft that to Cable and bring Cable back to life in the end. And then there's a fight with some other guy called Agent X for some reason that doesn't really make any sense, who also might be Deadpool's clone.
Yeah, well, he is. They go in a little more into him in other books.
Yeah,
and stuff.
I was trying to read up on him, and it was super fucking confusing.
I really want to jump into this because I haven't looked this up in a long time. But just in case those that don't know, MODOK is the mental mobile mechanized organism designed only for killing. Just so you know, that's what a MODOK is.
It's a giant head with
little
tiny
bitty arms and legs,
yeah,
and floats around on a little flying device. So
yeah,
MODOK is awesome.
Yeah. It got really weird and jumped all over the place by the end. It started out okay, but it it just felt really heavy-handed. The art was kind of dumb, and I don't know. I just think they've done better Deadpool since then and better Cable.
Well, I think the Deadpool series before that, which was drawn by Jeff McGinnis, and I can't remember who wrote it. Probably Fabian Nassisia also.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
I think it was. I think he wrote.
There's a very comedic one. It might not have been all him. I don't. Anyway, Jeff Loeb. I think Jeff Loeb wrote some of it too. So
I think Greg Pak did it after him.
And that was a great run. And it was a great series. Yeah, it really started for the first 12 or so issues run. But Deadpool's had a good run. I mean, even Cable's had some good stuff around here and there. And he's always been important. And like you said, we always kind of break down what the impact on their. That they'd made on the comic and post outside the comic industry and the video games and stuff, which I think we don't even really need to break it down on this one. There's a movie this freaking weekend about them. So.
Yeah, and I am kind of curious how they address, like, how powerful Cable is or isn't in this. Is he does he have the telekinesis, telepathy, and technokinesis or whatever
all those
it is?
Technos made you stumble. There was a lot of techno
much.
Words.
It's too and then his brother on the Apocalypse side has got even more ridiculous powers. Real quick, though, the only other thing that I forgot in 2004, and this was a running joke, so I had to look it up through the whole book, is Deadpool talks about the Olsen twins constantly.
Right.
And I was like, what in the fuck were the Olsen twins doing in 2004?
Was that when they turned 21?
They turned 18.
Oh, turned 18. That was it. Like, okay, that was...
Okay. That. I had to look it up today. I was like, what in the fuck were they doing? Because he talks about them nonstop. You know, that's like a continuing joke through the first 12 issues of an okay book. I would not buy this.
Okay, let's go ahead and rate and review it. And I read the first 6 issues back in the way back and maybe sporadic between the next 40 here and there.
Yeah.
And almost every time I picked it up, it was because of Scotty Young's covers. That was 99% of why I ever picked it up. But
I don't like the depiction that I didn't like the actual drawing inside of the book of Deadpool, like without his mask. I thought the guy who did it just made him look like he had like dry skin the whole time instead of his like face melting or, you know, like his skin scabs and all that. It just looked like he had dry skin. Like there was no change to it or whatever. And I just thought the characters were kind of goofy. But I would give it a 2 out of 6.
Oh, a 2. That's going low. Hey, by the way, just in case people were left up for grab, when we were talking about the Age of Apocalypse, Nathan, that is, in fact, Cable, but he goes by Nathan Gray.
Yes.
He's just
it's
Age
a twin of brother or alternate universe version of himself.
Well, but that's who he would have been had the technovirus and all that stuff. Yes. So they're the same guy. So they both, at one point, just so we can convolute the story more, they both exist in the same universe at the same time at some point. So
Just like Jean Grey's clone. And Scott Summers' date again. That's not fucking weird.
No. So I think that I probably would go a little heavier. I'd go probably 2.5 to 3. I'll go 3 because that first 6 issues were cheesy. I think what it did more than anything is it set up what would be the tongue-in-cheek humor of what Deadpool would be. Somebody else better just did it.
Okay. I'll give you that. And I think that the issues 7 through 12 were better. I thought the story was overall a little more interesting than the One World Church. I just didn't think it was a very interesting
One World Church had come back before again later for Deadpool. Yeah, he fought them back in his next series.
Well, he was actually working for him like pretty much all the way to the very end. Like he was all in on like you said, he's a very transparent character who is whoever has the best idea, I'm with them. Yeah. You know, and then somebody else comes along and he's like, nope, no, I'm with you.
The beauty of Deadpool is how simple they create the character.
Yeah.
And that allows all the comedy, all the bloodbath, all whatever they need. Plus he's got a mutant healing factor more powerful probably than Wolverine, so
the one thing that this run did do was it was the first introduction to the fourth wall breaking in the intro,
which
on
is a
issue,
mainstay now.
Yeah, on issue 11 of this series, they broke the fourth wall with a little conversation that Deadpool initially did, and then I think Weasel and what's the AIM guy that's his buddy?
I can't remember his name, but
Bob or something.
Bob
does.
Agent
Bob
Hydra.
Narrates it. Yeah, narrates it after that, and then I think later on they did the Dear Deadpool where he like answers fan mail or something as himself.
Yeah,
which is pretty funny. When I was reading Greg Pak's, that was some good stuff.
Well,
in there.
And Greg Pak not only added all that, but they introduced the third voice. So there's his voice that he has that the co-characters have. There's the his inner monologue, and then there's another voice inside it that contradicts his inner monologue.
Yeah.
So he has three distinct voices in comics.
And then he's like his one voice is explaining what the fourth wall is to comic book characters inside of it. It's a whole complicated thing, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, it's hilarious. Yeah. I guess if we have any recommendation at all, I would say maybe pick up the first 12 before the weekend just to familiarize yourself with how they ended up buddy copping their
just burn through it lightly.
Issue 7 also was in one of the top 10 buddy comics of all time.
Yeah.
Is what they threw it up in there.
Yeah, that was when they jumped together and actually started working, and that was when their first body slide went together. If they do that in the movie, it'd be fucking hilarious.
Maybe by the end. That would be like a post credit scene or something.
That's gotta be. It's gotta be gross.
Yeah. I guess that's good enough for Cable and Deadpool. I don't know if there's any more we need to say, but let's jump to the next comic. This is the one that you didn't know because so when we got together, we knew we were going to do the last comic.
Okay.
Because I don't know if you agree, but I think it was the best comic of that year.
Absolutely.
We knew we were going to do this because it was timely for what's happening this weekend with Cable and Deadpool, and I'm going to put this episode out either tonight or tomorrow, probably tomorrow morning.
Okay.
But this one was, I think, and we'll get into why at the end of it, but I think it was a little bit forgotten, but I did Identity Crisis, which...
Refresh my memory.
So Identity Crisis is the 7-issue limited series by Rags Morales and writer Brad Meltzer, who at the time was a New York Times best-selling author. It was also inked by Michael Baer, for those that keep scoring inkers at home. The story adhered to the continuity changes brought on by post-crisis on Infinite Earth and Zero Hour stuff. So Wonder Woman was at one time retconned out of the pre-crisis JLA and replaced in story by Black Canary. Later, Infinite Crisis would restore her as a founding member. But here's what this was about. We'll jump into the plot if you don't remember. I think you borrowed this from me when we were neighbors.
I believe so, yes.
So
but it's been a while.
While on stakeout, Elongated Man gets notification that his wife, Sue Dibney, is murdered in their apartment, apparently dying from burns. The DC superhero community tries. They rally around him, try to find the murderer. With the primary suspect being Dr. Light. And the reason that is because Green Arrow reveals to the Flash, and this is the Wally West Flash, and Green Lantern, which is Kyle Rayner at the time, that Light once raped Sue Dibney.
Oh, heavy.
In the JLA satellite. He found his way into the JLA satellite. She was there by herself, and he raped her. To ensure this couldn't happen again, League members at that time, which were Atom, the Ray Palmer Atom, Black Canary, Hawkman, Green Lantern, Hal Jordan, so that's important because that's at the time it was Hal Jordan, and a very reluctant Flash, which was Barry Allen. They all voted to let Zatanna, who's super powerful, the woman that says words backwards to make her spells, to mind wipe Dr. Light. And they essentially reduce him to a drooling moron who becomes the Justice Society and JLA's punching bag for the next 20 years or so in comics.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's further revealed that the mind wipe was also done at least on one other occasion, and that's when the Secret Society of Supervillains, this is the Wizard, Floronic Man, Star Sapphire, Reverse Flash, and Blockbuster, capture JLA members Superman, Batman, Flash, Green Lantern, Hal Jordan again, Zatanna, and Black Canary. This was Wonder Woman in pre-crisis, but they've swapped it out, and switched bodies with the heroes. This allowed the villains to learn their secret identities simply just by taking their masks off.
Ooh, deep. That's
so
a deep
although
one.
The heroes defeated the villains, they once again came to a vote that Zatanna needed to mind wipe them because they needed to protect their secret identities and their families.
It's a slippery slope they're going down.
Well, it gets even worse, like it tends to do. The heroes now find Light, and Light, knowing that the heroes are after him, and again, this is a Dr. Light that poses no threat to anyone. He's just kind of a joke.
Okay.
But he had enough money that he hired the mercenary Deathstroke, and what's important about that in terms of long-term in comic books is this, more than anything, reasserts the fact that Deathstroke is a badass.
Yeah.
And people kind of forget that he preceded Deadpool.
Yeah.
And his name's Wade Wilson.
No, he's Slade
Wilson or
Slade Simpson or something.
So Wade Wilson, I mean, it's a complete parody of him.
Yeah, Rob Liefeld basically he made Deathstroke, right?
Him and Fabian did it.
Yeah, and then when he left, he basically made the exact same character in Marvel.
Yeah, he No, he did not make Deathstroke. So, no. Deathstroke's been around well longer than he's been drawn. Yeah. But it was just a ripoff.
Yeah, it was a direct ripoff.
So, during the battle, Light is... He sees the battle going on in front of him, and it refreshes his memory to when he did rape Sue, and it unlocks his memory. So now he's in control of 100% of his powers.
So he's back again.
Well, he's back to a level that we never knew, because as comic, the most meta thing about this is comic fans, we've never known him, because this is a story that was untold up till now.
Oh, interesting.
And he is super powerful, actually, because he makes these hard light constructs. He's got the light of the sun. He could do a lot of stuff.
Okay.
So Superman shows up at the end after the battle's cleared, and he questions Wally West, who continues to protect all the heroes and everything they'd done.
So Superman was not involved in the
He was not involved in any of this. But there is a cool little scene in the book to where Green Lantern is talking to, or Green Arrow is talking to Green Lantern and Flash, and they're like, why doesn't Superman know? And he goes, because son, no matter how powerful you are, sometimes you just don't want to hear the truth. And they're talking within earshot, which Superman should be able to hear them.
He's just blocking it out.
He's just not paying attention, and he's just, it's out of sight, out of mind. Adam then goes on to find his estranged wife, Jean Loring, hanging from a door. She's blindfolded and gagged, and he gets there just in time to revive her and save her, but she is she can't tell him who attacked her. It was all a blur. She was hit. And then death threats are sent to across the thing, so targeting Superman's wife, Lois Lane.
Okay.
Then another big moment. So there was a lot. I mean, we'll get into that in a second. So Flash's rogues gallery plays a big part of this.
Okay.
Captain Boomerang, who's at the time Digger Harkness, is hired by a third-rate villain called the Calculator on behalf of the real killer of the series.
Please tell me that this guy carries a calculator.
The Calculator?
Yeah.
He is the, you know who Oracle is for good guys? He's the Oracle for the bad guys.
Gotcha.
He's what they end up turning him into, because he calculates everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So to assassinate Jack Drake, who is the father of Robin at the time, Tim Drake.
Okay.
Who, by the way, for those that don't know, he's probably the most popular Robin. In fact, he's even more popular than what Dick Grayson was as Robin, and he's more of a sleuth and a detective than Batman is. He's even smarter than Batman when it comes to being a detective. But so Jack, though, finds a gun and a note warning him of the impending attempt on his life, thinking that, and that you'll get to that later. So Boomerang attacks him, and he shoots Boomerang, but Boomerang fatally throws a boomerang at him and kills him. So Tim Drake gets there after school, and he's confronted by his partner Batman, who confiscates the notes and before the authorities know of it and stuff like that. So now the Robin's dead. His dad's dead, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And which plays a lot of for the next few years over in the comic. And we've also got Dibny. During questioning of several villains by the heroes, former League members Firestorm, which is Ronnie Raymond, is stabbed through the chest with the sword of a character called the Shining Knight. The sword of the Shining Knight by a villain called the Shadow Thief. Firestorm's nuclear powers reach critical mass, and he detonates in the atmosphere. So he's dead now.
So this is sort of like got some of the elements of the other one with the
Kingdom Come a little bit. This is more. This sounds large in scope, but it's really a personal story. Really, much smaller.
It just
story.
Feels huge.
Wally West questions Green Arrow again after accidentally seeing a snapshot in the green because the satellite records things of the satellite in Light's mind. So here's what was different though. So they go back in this issue. This is one of the big reveals, and there's a picture where they're all holding Dr. Light back, but in the real picture, it's Batman they're holding back. So
he's not going along with this.
So Green Arrow says that he disapproved and nearly attacked the other heroes. He was supposed to be left, but he actually teleports back because he forgot something, and he sees what they're doing, and he loses his mind. And so they mind wipe Batman.
Yep.
And he's unaware of it.
Well, there you go. Slippery slope.
So then at the end of that issue, the autopsy of Sue Dibny's body by Dr. Midnight and Mr. Terrific, they find those are two members of the Justice Society. They find that she was actually killed by a little infraction in her brain, which after a microscopic scan turned out to be tiny little footprints in her brain, which Adam's the only person with that kind of technology that they know of. So Dr. Midnight and Mr. Terrific realizes, as does Batman, that she was not murdered. She was not murdered by an assassin as an access to the technology, but she was murdered by someone who had access to the Adam's technology. Almost simultaneously, the Atom himself, Palmer, learns that Gene is aware that the note that was sent to Drake, which was supposed to be a secret because Batman got to it before anybody else, and he deduces that it's in fact his ex-wife who is the killer. So Lauren claims she did not mean to kill Sue. It was not her intention for Jack Drake to be killed. That's why she left the gun.
Yep.
Arguing that she sent the note and the gun to protect him. She also states that she undertook the plan, including faking the attempt on her own life, in order to bring Ray back to her life. She was trying to get her husband back.
Gotcha.
Palmer claims, you know, he finally figures out that maybe she's just insane, and they lock her in Arkham Asylum and keep her under heavy medication. In the final scene of the issue with the Justice League, Wally West is awkward in the presence of Batman, who begins to be suspicious of why they're all acting different around him. So aftermath of this, the ramifications of the story they go for a long way. They hit the Flash, Fraser's Rogues Gallery are blown apart through this whole thing, and they band together, becoming a great run for the comic books. Them. There was a Countdown to Infinite Crisis, as well as one-shot and tie-ins, the OMAC Project, JLA. Then Batman, when he finally remembers everything, he creates Brother MK1 satellite and to monitor superhumans, which goes on to be a big part of the Infinite Crisis story.
Okay.
Brad Meltzer would go on to write for a few years for DC. He did Green Arrow before this. He did Justice League, which was his run on Justice League when they relaunched that was awesome. And then he did Buffy Season 8, which was a comic book.
Yeah.
This book was here's what I want to talk about. This book, I think, suffers from a couple of things. It suffers from all these words, crisis.
Yep.
It suffers from all these multiple relaunches that DC's done over the years.
Yep.
But this book was, you could tell by the top 10, it was a massive hit.
Yeah.
This book was a massive hit. It was this very small story told about these grandiose characters.
Yep.
And I don't know, man. It got great reviews. It was a recommended reading to a lot of young adults because of the heavy-handed rape being a part of it.
That
scene in that book, and I've got it over there. If you've never looked at it,
I gotta be honest. I don't think I read this.
It's grotesque seeing Dr. Light because he is like overtaken with his desires to get back to her, and they are. Yeah, it's just a little weird.
I'll borrow it though. I'm gonna do it again.
He's like, I'm gonna do this again. You know, and that's why they mind wipe him. He goes, I'll get to every one of them if I can.
That's interesting that what I'm taking out of this is like they mind wipe him, but they've never mind wiped the Joker or, you know, somebody who's just equally as evil.
That's the thing too. And you have to remember that the flashback to the mind wiping and stuff was like a long time ago.
Yeah, it was
Zatanna was pretty new. And then they come to terms with maybe what they're doing is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So, because they are good guys, in fact, but they're. Yeah. Yeah, and then you also have to think, too, why can't they just do that to a lot of people and create an end to villainy?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, I was never big into DC, but my son and I do watch that Flash show.
The CW show.
Yeah, and it's very good. And what I do like that DC does, and I think that Marvel could take a cue from, is when they go back and they do these things where they go back in time and they change something or they retcon something. There's always a consequence that comes from it. Like, it's never a clean, okay, everything's happy now.
Right,
if you go back and you save somebody,
the pop culture world works.
No, but I just think that DC does a better job
they
of
do.
That.
Yeah, they do. I think you're right with that. They do.
Or at least pretending that it's heavier handed.
That said, DC's probably got a bigger problem with its time. It's history than Marvel does because they keep doing all these crises and
they need to find another word
it's not like Marvel's not without sin. All these Infinity Wars, Infinity War, Infinity Gauntlet, Infinite. I mean, it is
super confusing when you're trying to just.
It's a bit much, but I get why they do it. I think, and we've just seen it peak. I mean, it gets no bigger than the biggest movie almost of all time. So,
Which. Worked, by the way.
I know you haven't read it, but I'll go ahead and give my rate in recommending, and it's a kind of a twofold rating. I definitely would recommend it. It started. There was a good 4 years where everything that happened in this really fueled the DC universe.
Okay.
At the time, it was a 6. Now I think it's about a 4.5 for
me. Okay.
And I think that, and that's not to say the story, like going back and revisiting the story, it got less. It's just that it doesn't matter anymore because of what
they've changed everything.
New 52 and new 52 and the other 52, like new Coke and old Coke.
New number one or whatever. Yeah. But I will say that it sounds very interesting, and I do want to read it, and I think that it's kind of fun.
So you have a 6 on the anticipation scale.
Yeah, and I will try to read it before the next one. If not, then I will definitely have it done before the next one.
Do before we do the next one, and then when we revisit 2004, you can give us your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think that'll be fun.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, we just invented a new segment.
Yeah, so we'll do that. If we ever bring up a comic that the other one hasn't really read, we'll go back and read it, and then we'll give our thoughts on it at the beginning of the next episode.
Absolutely.
Look at what we do, man. We're just inventing podcasting right here. I was snapping. You couldn't hear that.
Yeah. I think they could hear it.
But let's snap on to the next title, huh?
Yeah, I like it.
I think hands down, I got a feeling I know what we're going to rate this, but I think this was the best comic book, at least the best mainstream comic book of the year. And I'll get into how much I liked it at the end of it. But this would be Astonishing X-Men Volume 1, written by one Joss Whedon of Buffy and Serenity Firefly fame. Art by, more importantly, Avengers fame.
Avengers and lesser known Dollhouse, which I did not like. People did. I didn't.
And now DC Universe, he's over there.
Yeah.
And art by John Cassidy. And let me just say this, and this is going to be a big boast for me.
Okay.
I think Jim Lee is the greatest comic book artist I've ever seen.
Okay.
But I think John Cassidy's run on Planetary, but more importantly, this X-Men, maybe the best looking comic I've ever seen.
It is very gorgeous.
I think it's even better. As much as I love Jim Lee, and trust me, Hush and all that stuff is great. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying Cassidy's a better artist. I'm not saying it's apples to oranges.
No, it's just very clean.
It's just amazing.
Yeah,
it tells a story amazing. Yeah. So that said,
it's the emotion that he captures in their faces.
We're kind of breaking our rule here. We're going to get into the first two arcs. And one of the reasons I'm justifying the 12 issues is because this was badly late. So it went into 2005 pretty deep.
But if you look at the art and like how deep the story is, it kind of makes sense.
And he was also drawing Planetary at the time. And then he had to come over and draw another book. I forgot to write down what that book was. But so he was busy. So the first 6 issues of this series, Gifted, which is, like I just said, 1 through 6, focuses mainly on the introduction of several key characters. Also introduced is a mutant cure designed by the Indian Benetech scientist, Dr. Kavita Rao, I don't know how you pronounce it. Who was secretly sponsored by the person we mentioned earlier, a warrior alien named Ord. The prospect of so the prospect of having real humanity captures the attention of the heavily mutated beast at this time. So if you don't know, he was a cat at this time, thanks to Warren Ellis's run on New X-Men, which came to an end in 2004. Mention that already.
Speaking on that, I didn't dive too much into it, and I still really have never done more research into it. He has multiple mutation levels, and he's actually mutating backwards, becoming more feral. He was mutating backwards.
Well, what Warren Ellis introduced in New X-Men, which came to an end in 2004, was secondary mutations. Even there was mutations among mutants. Mm-hmm. He was the first, and his was probably the most pronounced of what we saw, because he became like a cat, which he couldn't like really use his hands like he had to. And he was getting more feral looking, and he was getting more feral in actions from time to time. He's still brilliant.
Yes, but he would slip away.
Yeah, and he was worried that eventually it would take completely over. Yes. So he saw this as an opportunity. So he went to go visit Dr. Rao, only to discover that the drug is a product of illegal human experimentation on an unknown victim. So he, of course, does what he's supposed to do. He alerts the X-Men, and they raid Benetech. And lo and behold, like the intro to our episode and how comics don't, our characters don't stay dead, they reunite and free Colossus.
Yes.
Who has been dead at this point since 2001, thanks to sacrificing himself to cure the legacy virus.
Yes.
And save his sister.
Yes.
With Colossus's help, the team take down Ord, who's a badass on it. There is an amazing, speaking of the art, amazing fastball special in it.
Couple fastball specials throughout the series, though.
But the big, this one's a big one. This is the one where they look at each other and wink, and he goes, and he just throws him without even saying it. Yeah. And it's just great. But it's, they beat Ord, but not before it's revealed that Ord, his plan was to take down the X-Men because in his planet is prophesized that an X-Man would destroy his home planet, the Breakworld, within the next 3 years.
Yes.
Which you would think, hey, that sets up the next story arc.
But it doesn't.
It does not.
No.
And instead, the next story arc is Dangerous, which goes from 7 through 12, and it features a Sentinel attack with a mystery mastermind.
Mm-hmm.
The culprit turns out to be the Danger Room itself, which is becoming sentient and appears...
Sentient,
yeah. And appears as a robot called Danger. Now, here's where it gets ugly, and the X-Men get really pissed at Professor X because, as we mentioned in the last episode, Professor X is not without his demons.
No, he's kind of a dick.
He's imprisoned Danger and made Danger an unwilling host of the Danger Room, leaving the X-Men disgusted because he knew that there was actual humanity inside this robot. And by the end of this 12 issues, I know we didn't break it down like we did before, but there's a lot. I really want you to go read it. But by the end of this, it's revealed that Emma Frost is still aligned with a newly formed Hellfire Club.
Yes. That gets complicated later.
There's a lot of fantastic stuff in this with Wolverine being... Yeah, I mean, this is, like I said, they're...
So, what I got out of this, essentially, I would say is Scott and Emma are together after Jean has died for, I don't know, the 47th
for
time
the
at this point.
Time, yeah.
Wolverine's not happy about it. Emma Frost is the good guy now who's there, but she still can't shake her bad guy... M.O. in the beginning.
Well, she can't shake. She's a bad girl at heart, and I don't mean a villain. I just mean she's the
She's not a superhero.
Well, what she is the Regina George of her school.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's the mean girl. She's the Lindsay Lohan, or not Lindsay Lohan, but what's the other chick from that movie who plays Regina George?
Shit, I don't know.
That girl.
Yeah. Anyways, doesn't matter. So Kitty Pryde comes in, and she is the good girl of the school, and...
Yeah, she comes in to be the assistant headmaster.
Yeah, and she, you know, and the things that this story arc does is it really gives a lot of power to Kitty Pryde.
Well, Kitty, for those that don't know and unfamiliar with the character, Kitty really came to prominence in the 80s with she became
Days of Future Past.
Yeah, well, she was Wolverine's right hand man, so to speak. He teaches her he takes her with her to Japan. She learns martial arts. Her powers are pretty impressive when she gets fully control of them. She would later be replaced by Jubilee when Kitty kind of leaves the X-Men.
Yeah, Jubilee was a product of the 90s. Through
she was the aging girl that dressed all in a permanent
yellow
raincoat.
And pink.
Yeah,
and
raincoat.
All that stuff. Yeah. Blue high tops and all that.
And she had a light. She had a light show as her powers.
But what this story arc does for me is it. In the X, they could learn from this again. Is it contained itself? It stayed within its wheelhouse.
That's a good thing that you brought up because my close friends Dwayne and all of us that have read comic for years, and I think you and I have really talked about it too, is what comics don't do anymore, and more so even now than ever, as we get. We're main event after main event after crossover event after epic event. And there was a lot of epic stuff going on in Marvel and DC at the time. But this story was just this story.
Yeah.
They even had to come out and say, well, it exists on its own separate. It's a different story. But that's just it. It was so, so good.
And it was so good. It didn't have to overlap anything. And it didn't bring in too many characters. It was... only Cyclops and Emma's the leaders, and then Beast, Wolverine, Kitty Pryde, her dragon Lockheed, and Colossus. For the most part, it had it brought a little bit of Nick Fury, the old Nick Fury, pre-Sam Jackson Nick Fury in there.
Well, the second story arc does that.
No. He's in the first one.
What's he?
With Ord of Breakworld.
Well, see, they don't go to Breakworld until the second.
No, they don't, but they...
But that's when, I mean... Yeah, oh, they turn
Brand,
him over. They
yeah,
turn
they
him
turn him over to Abigail
Yeah, and you
Brand.
Learn about, what is the name of it? It's not...
Sword.
Sword, which is the space version of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, yeah.
Sword,
which is Abigail Brand, which is like
Sword and S.H.I.E.L.D. is a clever play.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can find it. Strategic World something. Anyway, doesn't matter. Sentient World Observation and Response Department.
That's it. I mean, that's pretty fucking good.
But it just does such a good job, like, of capturing, like, Ord is a badass. Like, he's a total badass. But he's also a goofball idiot, which is, you kind of see Josh Whedon's, like, comedy there. Like, he's supposed to be the biggest bad dude in his planet, but he loses in the dumbest ways. You know, like, he's so powerful and strong and has everything planned out, but then he, like, trips and falls, you know, type situation. Like, he just loses in the goofy ways.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it catches him off. Like, he's expecting to go toe-to-toe with Colossus and Cyclops, but Kitty Pryde just, like, trips him. And it's, you know, like, funny shit like that.
No, it's Joss Whedon.
Yeah, and it works. And it works on every level. And
I can't wait till we get to the year where we break down 7 through 24 and the giant size Astonishing X-Men.
Yes.
Yeah, because as much as I love this.
Yeah.
I think there's more moments, especially when Cassandra Nova comes back. And by the way, that those that don't know, the popularity of Negasonic Teenage Warhead is from this.
From this, yeah. Yeah. She's a member of the Hellfire Club.
Yeah, and now she's, you know, pretty popular in movies now. But I wanted to get in before we let's talk about the reception of this and the claim.
Well, we didn't really talk about Danger or going to...
Oh, yeah, go ahead, yeah. Yeah.
I thought that was a pretty interesting... And it's very clever. And she goes on to be a good guy, I believe.
She goes on with them.
Yeah.
So in this run, Whedon's run, and it's one of those things to where you always wonder how no one had ever thought of this before.
Yeah.
When they thought of, for instance, I think in the history of my reading comics, I think one of the biggest aha things I thought, how did we miss that was 30 Days of Night.
Yeah.
When somebody simply come up with the idea of like, well, hey, if it's dark for so long in Alaska, why can't we just have vampires all migrate there?
Yeah, it's genius.
Yeah, and
I love that movie, by the way.
Oh, it's underrated. The series of comic books is great. It's underrated. Barry Templesmith and Stephen Niles, I think, wrote it. The book. I can't remember who wrote the comic. I think that's who wrote it. Stephen Niles, I think, wrote it.
I like the movie more than the book.
Well, I get it, because the book reads like it's going to be a movie.
Yeah.
So that said, this is another one. Like, the Danger Room had been training the X-Men to get better all this time.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't it know how to kick their ass? It's learned it over the years. Yeah. So that's one of those no-brainer where you feel dumb for not having thought of it before him.
Yeah. And we should mention that this was the inspiration for the terrible...
I was about to mention that. So the first six was the inspiration for the X-Men The Last Stand, which is the all-time worst X-Men movie.
Is it worse than Apocalypse, though?
Oh, I forgot Apocalypse. I blocked it out.
It was up until Apocalypse.
It had a 10-year reign of being the worst X-Men movie until...
Congratulations. They had a 2-for-1 thing going on, like where 2 were good, 1 was bad. 2 were good, 1 was bad, and then Apocalypse came and ruined it.
Yeah, and thank God that we had... How did Apocalypse even get made when we had 2 good X-Men films? You know what I mean? I mean, it's absurd. We had First Class and Days of Future Past, which were decent movies, very good movies.
Yeah, they were. And then how does Oscar Isaac go from Poe Darum to Apocalypse?
Dameron in the...
Dameron? Is it Darum or Dameron? I don't know, it doesn't matter. How does he go from Poe, like, a charismatic, great character to looking wooden and stupid?
I think we're both retarded. I think it's Poe Dameron. Dameron. Yeah, but yeah, and well, more important than that, I think before he was Poe, he was awesome in that Machina, Ex Machina.
Ex Machina.
Machina. Yeah,
either. I say it wrong all the time.
Which he was brilliant in that. Then he's been brilliant in being Llewellyn Davis. He was brilliant in that. So, and then he was awful, and it wasn't his fault. You can only work with
The material and the makeup was terrible.
And everyone thought
it was going to
be good because Bryan Singer came back for it. But nope, it's not the case.
I knew it was going to be bad when a cosplayer came out dressed as Apocalypse, and he did a way better job than the makeup. Yeah. And I was like, ooh, this is going to suck.
So let's more on its reception and acclaim and its influence. Gifted was critically praised and won the 2006 Will Eisner Award for Best Continuing Series, because that was at the end of his run, was 06.
Yes.
IGN called it the best X-Men run in a decade and said Whedon created flawless character dynamics between the X-Men. And I want to tell you that I want to go so far as I think it's the single greatest run X-Men's ever had. And I know that's saying a lot. There's Days in Future Past. There's a lot of Hellfire Club stuff. And there's some great moments in all those books. I've went back. I've read them. I read them when I first got into comics in 92 and before. But this is more enjoyable overall.
I agree, because it's just so clean. It's an easy story to follow. There's no ridiculous... Like, Colossus coming back is the biggest, like, it worked.
And I worked at a comic book store at the time. I was a manager of a comic book store at the time. I didn't yet own my own, but that was such a shock that no one knew that was going to happen. And then they had a 1 in 250 variant or 25 variant, I don't know, and it was Colossus.
Yeah.
And no one even knew that that was the variant cover until that day. And it instantly, and this was in the still in the infancy of social media that we have now. Mm-hmm. We just mentioned Facebook wasn't even a real thing for the world, just college.
Yeah, it just got out.
People were calling, like, hey, did you get your books in yet? No, well, yes, but I haven't opened them. You got to go, don't look at the variant. It's going to ruin it. I'm like, what? So you go to look at it, you're like, it's fucking Colossus? Yeah. Like, I mean, it was amazing at the time.
That's awesome.
Initially contracted for just 12 issues, Whedon decided to stay on through 24 issues, plus the special Giant Size Astonishing X-Men number one, in part, in theory, because he was upset. He was sorry for how delayed it was going to be.
Yeah.
And that he also knew he had some more story to tell. But the funny note about that, he got so excited by the second half of his story, he contradicted the timeline he created in the first half of his story in there. He kind of fucked things up a little bit.
That's all right.
You get a little overzealous. That's okay, though.
So you forgive him because the story's overall fun.
That said, let's go ahead and rate and recommend it to people.
I'm going to give it a 6, honestly.
It's a hard 6. It may be a 7.
Yeah.
It may be... Of all the comics we've evaluated on here, it may be a close third to Dark Knight and Watchmen.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's the third best comic we've reviewed so far. We've recapped. Review's not the right word. Recapped for people.
Yes, 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 yes. I agree. And I think going all the way through, like, we only had, you know, we said we were going to only read the first, you know, 12 issues of this, but I've already downloaded
it's hard to put them down.
Volume 3 because I have to finish it again because it's that good. You just, and it ends in true Whedon fashion on a real cliffhanger. Like, you have to pick up the next issue.
And we're, you know what? And the thing I love about this show that we've come up with is you and I just sitting for an hour plus talking about comics.
Yeah.
We said it was going to be 30 minutes.
That was kind of our idea, but, you know, we never do anything short.
What I don't like about it is this book here is because we were just doing the first 12 issues because it essentially took place mostly in 2004. I mean, I want to talk about it now, but we can't. We got to save it to when 2006 or 2000.
Yeah, we should wrap it up. In like whatever year that
2006
was.
You just gotta hold and read ahead and then when we eventually get to it and tweet us say I want to TYIC
the
2006
ending is so good that I just want to get to the end.
It's a hard 6. We recommend it. I've probably myself read it 10 times since it came out.
This is my third time.
From being hardcovers and stuff like that, and when it was on digital and Hoopla and all that stuff. I mean, you just can't. I mean, it's worth a look. Even if you only like art, if you're not into reading, the art's unbelievable. If you're not into art, but the reading is unbelievable. Yeah. It's got everything you want.
If you like Joss Whedon, if you liked some of the X-Men movies, you'll love this book. Because it's everything you want in X-Men.
It's very cinematic in scope.
Yeah. Your biggest complaint is Scott's kind of a downer, but he's always been kind of a downer.
Yeah, but that's just it. And that's what I don't want to ruin it. But he's a downer. But then in the second story arc, when they get to the break world, it's all for a reason.
Yeah.
It's...
And Emma is... Great.
I would almost go so far as say is and I'm Josh Roberts, sponsor of this version of our podcast and the comic cave in Springfield and CaveCon coming up in September. He always says he's the one that told me that I'm most given to hyperbole. He's the one that you think everything's the greatest. So I'm going to boast something here without having thought about the repercussions of what I'm about to say, but it may be the best transition of movie to comic.
Yeah.
Of any person that's ever done it, and there's been a few.
Okay.
I can't
off the top of my head argue with you. So I'm going to go with I agree.
We may
have
to research it and follow up on that too, and see what others have done. At least bring up others that have made the move.
From what I read, people were nervous about Whedon doing this.
Oh, I could I could imagine.
Yeah.
I
mean, and he pulled it off flawlessly.
Hey, he's always done quirky sci-fi or Buffy or things like that, and he took on a mainstream comic and he fucking hit a grand slam, man. Yeah. So Hard Six, and I mean we're at an hour, so that's about what we have. Any other parting shots on 2004 that we didn't talk about? Any comics that you can think of?
No, honestly, that was everything that I wanted to touch on was here in this. Other than that, I couldn't think of anything great. I do want to go back and read
Identity. I see it on
Identity Crisis.
I see it on the second shelf.
Crisis
up.
Of Infinite
it's
Earth.
Identity Crisis. There's too many crises. So. I'll let you have that hardcover to take home and read. And I can't think of anything else.
I would like somebody else to tell us what year they want.
Yeah, if I had one urge of the people listening, and we've had some.
Let's have NerdCon. His name from NerdCon or
Nerdcast? Jay. So we have had a good amount of people suggest. Most of the suggestions have been like 1963, which is Marvel, and things like that. And we will do that stuff. Yeah. We'll do like special episodes of that where we break down the first appearances of those and what else was.
We
going
should
on.
Just do like one episode then, and then talk about how like goofy and how it doesn't hold up.
We've also had some people have suggested maybe doing a best of theme of not a year, but like the best resurrections of a character.
Do a whole episode around
that. Mm-hmm. And I do want to keep with the that year in comics theme. And
at least for 10 episodes.
And a lot of people have said, no, you got to do that 92 with Image and stuff. But here's the thing. There's a lot of major big years and big events, and we'll get to them. But we want to sandwich it between all these stuff that you may not. The idea of this is to maybe turn you onto something you didn't know happened or you might not otherwise think of. And we need your suggestions. I don't care why you want to pick a year, but think of a comic that maybe you like that no one else likes.
Yeah.
Go back and look and see what year that is.
Yeah, you only have to pick one. We'll tweet do the research year. Around
yeah.
it.
Yeah, you just tell us. Just tweet at PC Bombcast and tweet that hashtag TYIC. And then the year you want us to do.
Yeah.
If we do one, that'll be the next episode. But just know we're not doing the big ones yet. We're gonna space them out.
Yeah.
We're gonna get my next excited, like the one I've go from 6 to midnight on is 92 because of Image Comics.
Okay.
And being the first real year of me being into comic books, you know.
I don't think anybody should say 6 to midnight. It brings up weird images that you don't want.
Well, I'll pop a boner when I think of that year. That's what I'm trying to say. I'm just beating around the bush, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so that said, I think we're done. Tweet us.
Yeah,
people.
Absolutely.
If you like this, tweet us. And I know you like it because it's the two most downloaded episodes we've had in the last 30
Which
episodes.
Which just goes to show Tom that I am the true number two.
Just does. That said, tell them bye, John.
Hold on to your butts, guys.
And we're going to play a music here. Very epic music. So...